Hey everybody, and welcome to a brand new episode of the Retro Raw Rundown here on Inside the Ropes. My name is Kenny McIntosh. I'm keeping it a little bit low volume, you know, in case the mic spikes. This may be the last podcast you hear on the old battleship microphone that I have. I'm joined here on the Retro Raw Journey, as always, by Sondra. Hi, Sondra.
Hi, Kenny. I can't stop giggling about Rocky's big R shirt, and I know we're going to talk about it in a little bit, but it was my favorite thing about Retro Raw. And
I love just thinking about the idea of how that came about. He needs a shirt. Like, what could we put on it? To put a big R.
Because his name is Rocky. Like, I don't know why. It just cracked me up so much. Probably because it was like 3 a.m. And
I did.
I needed Rocky's big R shirt at 3 a.m. to try and keep myself awake as I was trying to watch Retro Raw. But it cracks me up, you know, because The Rock, like, he's the coolest guy in Hollywood. And he, you know, he's this big muscle guy and he's this big movie star. And I love when The Rock looks like the biggest dork in the world on Retro Raw. It just cracks me up.
It's there. I just want to say very quickly before we begin the podcast, I did put it on Facebook and Twitter, with some sad news. One of our very loyal attendees to all of our shows passed away this morning at age 40. Mike, who came to all of our Manchester shows since we started with Sting in 2015. He was a big, jolly man who always had a smile on his face, and there was numerous times where I'd like walk past in some sort of like hurry and he would just be, you know, have a big cheesy grin on his face and we'd chat about wrestling for a minute and he made me feel happy. So, yeah, it's a real shame to hear that happened to him. But we were very glad to have him at Sting and Steiner and Paul Heyman and Matt Hardy. And the last one he came to was Wade Barrett in April. This episode is for Big Mike. And, yeah, that's some sad news. But anyway, on with the show, as they say. Retro Raw, we're going to be talking about the October 27th episode of Monday Night Raw / Raw is War / WWF Raw. So many names for it, isn't it?
Like, why do they have so many names for the show? I don't understand what the point of that is.
Well, it used to be Monday Night Raw. Then it became Raw. Then it became Raw is War.
And the first hour is Raw, and then the second hour is the War Zone, which doesn't make any sense. Why isn't it just Raw?
The idea is that they're, like, separate programs. So Raw is...
But they're so not. Like, they're not presented as separate programs. I think that's what
they
baffles
are.
Me about
them. They are. For the second hour, you get a separate intro and everything.
Well, I know you get a separate intro, but, I mean, they're... It's not... Like, through lines of the whole episode go through both, like, both hours.
That's true. Yeah, I can't really argue with you. I do want to say, as always, the Shotgun Saturday Night results for this week that were taped at this show. We had Jim the Anvil Neidhart defeating the Patriot by DQ. Can't believe they're on Shotgun. We have to watch some of the draws that we get on Raw. The Headbangers beat the Godwins on Shotgun, so you don't need to have a Godwins match.
Good.
Recon
still on the fucking show. It's a problem.
Recon of the Truth Commission beat Chains of DOA. And in the main event, we had Scott Taylor and Taka Michinoku beating Brian Christopher and Yoshihiro Tajiri. So that was the Shotgun results from this week. So the show kicks off with Pyro, as always. And then we had Vince and JR, no Jerry Lawler tonight. No Jerry Lawler on this show. It was never really explained why. Maybe it's because he was away preparing for Milton Bradley's Karate Fighters, which returned.
Which is back, and I didn't know that it was back, and then I got so excited when I saw that it was back.
So, the Nation of Domination had to start the show. Rocky Maivia has a big R on his t-shirt.
He really does. He does. And it's funny because it's not like it matches anything else that anyone else in the nation is wearing, right?
It's like, not like it's not like Godfather. It's not like Cam has a big K or D has a big D.
No. No, it's not like they all have initial shirts or anything. It's just Rocky. So I think that's why it stands out even more. Like later on when they're on the ramp, I think during one of the matches or something, they're all in a line, and you just have the Nation of Domination. They look like the Nation of Domination, and then just this big R, and that's just all you see.
It's excellent. It's really good. So the Nation are there. You know, Vince is apologizing. Farouk is basically, you know, pouring all the racism of America onto Vince McMahon, who responds, you know, there's no racism in the World Wrestling Federation. And then Rocky Maivia wants to speak. tells everyone to shut their mouths. He's not telling us to know our role yet, but you know, he's telling us to shut our mouths.
He sounded a little bit like The Rock.
He did. What's interesting is they hate this guy. Like,
yeah,
they hate him. And he's not really done anything. Like, to be, ever since he's come back in August, like, he's not, you can tell that he's kind of trying stuff out all the time. Like, sometimes it looks like he's trying too hard to be a heel and stuff, but you can tell he's kind of throwing shit at the wall. But, but you know, the heat is there for him, so I guess it's just about him getting better.
Which, I mean, it still baffles me how vitriolic the crowd is toward him, right? Because I just kind of saw him as boring, and then he went away, and like now he's in the Nation of Domination, but he's still not a guy that I would say has really stood out all that much. But apparently in 1997, the crowds just did not appreciate Rocky Maivia existing and really, really hated him for just being there, which ends up obviously working in his favor.
It does. It does. So he, you know, they're all chatting Rocky sucks at him. He's telling, you know, the Hart Foundation crossed the line. Now it is a black and white thing. Rocky talks about, you know, whenever racism knocked him down, he got back up. He's going to show them what it's like to face discrimination. Farouk challenges the Hart Foundation to a battle of the factions. The Hart Foundation come out. Bret Hart's got the mic. He accepts the challenge.
He was better at accepting a challenge than Marlena, for sure.
I mean, that's not high praise, but you are correct.
It's not.
He tells Farouk that unlike America, that Canada doesn't hate black people. Bret says that, you know, this is obviously the work of DX, pulling the strings, trying to force a wedge here. Then DX comes in the Titantron. Sean calls Bret the Grand Wizard and racist to his core. DX is siding with the Nation on this and calls the rest of the Hart Foundation Bret's KKK buddies.
Yep, that's definitely something he said.
DX are just basically making out the Hart Foundation are big old racists. The Hart Foundation,
because Hunter's like, the first outfits you had were white sheets and hoods, and I'm just like, are you serious with this? Like,
Hunter tells the Nation Domination that the Hart Foundation were using the N-word while they were spray painting their locker room, and that's all the Nation needed to hear because they were rushing up to have a big brawl with the Hart Foundation at the top of the ramp. Everyone's trying to separate them. Bret's kind of limping his ankle, and the main event tonight is Ken Shamrock versus Bret Hart for the World Wrestling Federation Championship, which, oh my god, I love Bret and Ken together.
So you say the main event.
Well, it's supposed to be the main
not.
Event. It's supposed to be the main event. That's how they are promoting it at the beginning. It obviously does not turn out to be that. What did you think of this opening segment? They're obviously trying to do, you know, this kind of three-way thing where they're building to Sean and Bret, and obviously Bret's going to be leaving, so they're basically trying to make sure that post-Survivor Series they have Hart Foundation and the Nation. what do you think?
I mean, how are the Nation of Domination the heels? Like, they're not, right? Like, they're just not, because all they're doing is talking about how they're upset at racism, especially after their locker room was vandalized last week. And there were some super racist things. Like, when Vince McMahon gets up there and, you know, does his apology, you know, on behalf of those responsible for the vandalism, and he's like, and to some extent, the racial slurs, like, he still seems unwilling to say that the shit written on the wall was racist, which it was. It was super racist. So I don't understand why Vince is like, there's no racism in the World Wrestling Federation. It's not allowed. Da, 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 da. And Farouk's like, there is, because look what happened. I present to you the evidence, right? Like, there is racism in the World Wrestling Federation. Even if you're saying the Hart Foundation did it, even if you're saying DX did it, that means that there is a faction in the World Wrestling Federation who's being super racist. So I don't understand why Farouk and Rocky and the rest of the Nation are, you know, getting heat for being like, we are facing discrimination. And then the crowd's like, boo, we want to discriminate against you, I guess. Like, as Rocky Maivia gets on the mic and starts talking about how he's faced discrimination, that's when the Rocky sucks chants, like, really intensify. Like, he gets on the mic to say, you know, if you shut your mouth for a second and listen to what I have to say, and they're, you know, like, they're booing him. But then as soon as he's like, you know, I face discrimination in my life, which is coming across as like this babyface speech, right? Like, I face discrimination and I've gotten back up and I'm like, you know, pick myself up and decided to get better and, you know, make my life better, whatever, whatever. And the crowd's just like booing the shit out of them. And then I don't understand the alignments here, because Vince McMahon on screen and probably behind the scenes wants to be like, no, there's no racism in this company. It's interesting that Farouk is addressing it directly to Vince, because Vince is clearly the owner now, right? Even though he's conducting these interviews. And then when Bret Hart comes out, I was kind of confused too, because it seems like the past couple weeks, the Hart Foundation have been a lot more babyface, right? Like, they've been getting cheered more, because if it's Hart Foundation versus DX, then Hart Foundation seems like the babyfaces. But Bret kind of regressed a little bit here. And, you know, he's talking about how he comes from a country where there is no racial prejudice, which is a lie. But, you know, like in Canada, we love people for who they are inside. And that's the basic truth. And the United States of America is riddled with prejudice. I mean, like, United States of America clearly is riddled with prejudice. Bret is not wrong. But it seems like, you know, he's trying to play the Canada angle to get booed again. But that just had, like, everyone is supposed to be a heel. Like, no one is supposed to be likable. But I don't really understand why I'm supposed to boo the Nation when they're talking about facing discrimination. Like, I feel like I should be on the Nation's side, right? Like, I feel like I should defend the Nation. And the other thing that I kind of took away from this was, like, the Hart Foundation knows that it's DX that did this. I'm glad the Hart Foundation actually got to respond and say, no, we didn't do the vandalism last week. That was DX. That was very clearly DX. It really seems like something DX would do, right? Because it is. And then, you know, DX on the Tron getting up there and, like, calling them the Grand Wizard and saying that they're clan buddies and stuff. I'm like, when did the Hart Foundation get equated to the KKK? This doesn't even make sense. Like, and then the Nation of Domination just believe them? Like, why do Farouk and company actually believe DX when DX are liars and sleazebags and they're not good people and they're constantly causing problems and they're constantly just wanting to stir shit between everybody, right? So the Nation attacking the Hart Foundation, I was like, are they that stupid? Like, am I supposed to boo them just because they're stupid and don't see that it's actually DX? So it's an interesting dynamic, I guess, between the three factions, but none of it, there's not really a good guy unless Vince McMahon wants to be the good guy, but he doesn't really seem like the good guy because he's all like, well, there's no racism when there clearly is.
I get what they're trying to go for. I just think it's really hitting. Like, because the thing is, it seems like, you know, the Hart Foundation is supposed to be the baby faces, and the Nation is supposed to be the heels, and then DX are the heels that are trying to make out the Hart Foundation of the bad guys. But then because Bret's leaving, they don't really want to put the full rocket behind them, so they're kind of being half pregnant with him. So he's not
like, I think it was a misstep for him to go back to the Canada versus USA thing in Tulsa, Oklahoma, right? Because he's not going to get cheered for being like, in Canada, we don't have racial prejudice, and da-da-da-da-da. Like,
well, this is done because they're planning to do it Survivor Series, Team USA versus Team Canada. I'm not really too sure why that's a good idea if your plan post-Survivor Series, let's go with what they were thinking they were going to do, was to have the Hart Foundation be... I mean, because there's no way you're walking out of Montreal with Bret Hart leaving without the Hart Foundation being babyfaces going forward. So I'm kind of just baffled by the booking. I'm baffled by what they're trying to achieve. Like, surely the idea would be build Bret up to a big enough point that when Sean beats him, it means something. That would be the idea.
I would think so, but they're doing the opposite.
Yep.
So it's, they're just kind of cutting him down and making it mean less, which is unfortunate.
We do then get, you know, sometimes in Retro Raw they like to give Sondra, you know, a blast in the past, a nod to the good old days.
For fuck's sake.
Hunter Hearst Helmsley versus Goldust.
Why? Why? I have seen this match so many times.
What was your favorite one?
So many times. The one where it didn't happen. The one where I didn't have to watch this match anymore. No, I think... probably, I like whenever Chyna and Marlena get into it more than Goldust and Hunter Hearst Helmsley, because they're actually more interesting, right? But Goldust versus Hunter Hearst Helmsley is shite. It's always shite. It will always be shite. I don't want to see it ever again.
How long do you think this match was, out of curiosity?
12 hours.
5 minutes.
That was it?
Yep.
It felt very long.
You're like, you're
it didn't
like,
help
you're
that
like
Rick
when,
Rude was talking.
You're like when Brian Alvarez watches an old school Divas match. When he's like, this was like 25 minutes and Meltzer's like, it was 3 minutes. He's like, what? Anyway, so Rick Rude introduces Hunter in his own signature way. Sean is on the headset as usual. There's one point where Chyna hits Goldust with a clothesline and a slam. Marlena walks over towards her. the crowd thinks something might be happening, but then Marlena was sensible enough to go, nope, I'm not going to try this because I've tried it before and it never works out well, apart from the 1 week where I came out in disguise and beat her up. Hunter ends up kind of getting the upper hand, and then Helmsley goes on the outside to try, you know, I think he was just like reverting back to his old, like, oh, I need to kidnap Marlena again. And because that's what people
it's a
do.
Woman, I must kidnap her.
Well, no, I think it's just a Marlena thing, isn't it? People want to kidnap Marlena. This is like
they do,
Helmsley,
but
Pelman.
Hunter Hearst Helmsley does have a history of, you know, handcuffing women to ring posts, for instance. So yeah. He likes to steal women.
So he tries to go towards Marlena. She slaps him. Her gold purse then goes into Goldust's hands, but then China steals it away. She decks Goldust. Helmsley gives Goldust the pedigree, gets the win, and that's it. So Goldust and Marlena back together, but Triple H gets the win here. It was fine. It wasn't as sloppy and as bad as some of the other matches, and I thought there was enough going on with Marlena and China to not make it feel like it went too long. So it was short and inoffensive for me.
The shenanigans helped for sure. I will say that. Did Goldust look especially pudgy today?
He did. Like, he looked like he'd just been carrying a little bit of holiday weight before the holidays.
Yeah, it kind of did.
Sean also hops on the announce table at the end to tell Vince to suck it, and McMahon is disgusted, which is ironic given what he would do later on. But
right.
He is...
I thought that was interesting, though, because, you know, Sean's like, this is a win for DX and for Triple H and da-da-da, and a big ol' loss for the World Wrestling Federation and, you know, Vince and Jim Ross, you can suck it. But suck is bleeped. Can you imagine if they had bleeped the word suck every single time going forward into the Attitude Era? Like, it's baffling to think about.
It's interesting to note that this week in The Observer... Dave Meltzer wrote that, you know, don't think that anything Shawn Michaels is doing now isn't planned and approved. The deal right now is that WWF are booking with the idea that everyone who watches their show is on the internet or reads newsletters. So they believe that they're watching thinking that Shawn wants to get fired and go to WCW anyway, and that Vince isn't going to fire him and let a top name go. So they're booking his character with a gimmick that he's doing everything he can every week to embarrass Vince into firing him.
I mean, it's an interesting way to go, and
it's a niche
that
angle.
Way.
It is an interesting angle, and I think it's critically good, I think, but like commercially, I don't know how much of your audience really know that stuff, because you know
I didn't even like I did because you just told me.
Yeah.
But as I'm watching this, and I, you know, like you've told me some of the background before as we've been doing this Retro Raw stuff. And even I, having, you know, heard from you the situation where Sean isn't happy and does kind of want to go to WCW and be with his friends, that's not something that's coming across to me at all. Like, I'm just seeing that he's a cunt, basically.
She went ahead and said it.
He is. Like, that's all. He's on TV. He's just being incredibly irritating. And I think to the detriment of the program. I mean, I will say on commentary, he actually was pretty decent on commentary, saying stuff like, you know, oh, Goldust is using a closed fist. Hunter Hearst Helmsley has won this match like 3 times via disqualification because Goldust was cheating behind the ref's back. You know, like he hits Hunter in the dick at one point because that's what Goldust does, apparently. And so I thought Sean actually was effective at pointing some of that stuff out, but seeming really sleazy about it. So that's a compliment that I'll actually give to Shawn Michaels. But for the most part, he's just so over the top and so irritating that it's more like, I don't even necessarily want to see him get beat. I just want him to shut up. Like,
your wish is not going to come true for a little while yet. We get another Cornette's commentary. Luckily, it is no longer talking about Phil Mushnick. Thank God.
I'm real tired of Phil Mushnick.
The night before this was Halloween Havoc, WCW Halloween Havoc, where they had a cage match with Hulk Hogan and Roddy Piper. And, you know, the issue is that, you know, Roddy Piper's a guy who's 44, Hulk Hogan's 45 or something. Piper's got a prosthetic hip, so the idea is, let's do this Cornette's commentary that basically makes fun of the fact that they're using old guys in the main event all the time. So, Cornette talks about, you know, who's the icon of wrestling? WCW had Hogan and Piper in a cage, trying to say they're the best one ever. 3 weeks after Hell in a Cell, Hulk Hogan, Roddy Piper, Shawn Michaels, and Bret Hart all make claims to be the icon, but all fail in comparison to guys like Ric Flair, The Undertaker, and Steve Austin, who work hard and don't brag about who they are. Usually, if you have to say you're an icon, you're probably not. Like most things, what was the finishing line again? Usually,
the personal note to Hulk Hogan, or
yeah, that's it.
Okay, on a personal note to Hulk Hogan, you are a household word, but so is garbage, and that stinks when it gets old too.
Oh, so good.
He is really, really good. He talks about the cage match being a tribute to the ego of both men, and this match was a slap in the face to every wrestler who takes pride in his profession. And, you know, I like that he said, "The Undertaker, Ric Flair, and Steve Austin have never claimed to be icons, which puts them in the running to be just that." And he's not wrong. Like, he's not wrong at all. So I've heard this rant before, and I like it. I think it's really good. It's interesting that, you know, he's burying Hulk Hogan and Roddy Piper for being old and everything. And then he says, Shawn Michaels is the icon who can still go. Bret Hart would claim to be the icon if he stopped whining about being screwed by the WWF. So in there, he doesn't say anything against Shawn Michaels there particularly, but he is saying stuff against Bret Hart. Which
true.
I find interesting.
I know, because I was actually watching this with a friend, and he was like, "Oh, he mentioned him getting screwed. How did he know?" And I was like, "Well, I mean, Brett, to be fair, for the first 4 months of the year, did constantly get screwed.
Yes,
like every week." We then get clips from they did an Oklahoma Legends ceremony. I've never even seen they did this, where they celebrated JR, Bill Watts, Jack and Jerry Briscoe, Danny Hodge. You know, I get it's a nice thing for the crowd. You know, fair dues.
Yeah, I thought it was cool. I mean, they were people that, you know, this crowd would have seen regularly, so. And it didn't take too long. It wasn't like that one.
Because they showed us the highlights, right? It's not like they showed us the
highlights. Yeah. And I thought it was a nice little highlight package. It, you know, it was fine.
Intercontinental Championship, Owen Hart versus Ahmed Johnson. So it's funny, I was watching this match. We don't have time to dissect why Ahmed Johnson is getting a title shot here, because it makes no sense. Let's just agree it makes no sense and try and live with it. Ahmed's got his hand wrapped up, and I'm watching it, and I think this, we're watching it now back in this sort of like second timeline for me watching it. This is the match that I go, Ahmed's done. Because
he's
so slow, he can barely get up, you can tell his knees are bothering him. Everything he hits is just kind of like he hits a scissor kick at one point, and I genuinely was scared that he was going to die.
I thought he was going to fall over. It looked like he was going to trip.
It was bad. And then, like,
terrible. This match was so bad. I mean, like, Owen starts punching Ahmed. Like, he, you know, kind of comes out the gate trying to punch him, and Ahmed just, he does the no-sell thing, right? Because he's like, I'm Ahmed Johnson, and I'm big, and I'm not going to sell your punches, which is fine, but he looks bored and annoyed more than, like, big and monstrous. He just kind of looks mad that he's there.
Yep. Nation Domination at the top of the ramp, proving that they can't quit Ahmed.
And Rocky still has his R shirt.
Rocky still has his R shirt on. What I thought was good about this, well, I mean, the thing that's really sad is I really loved Ahmed Johnson, and I'm not even saying it in an ironic way. Like, I thought he was so mental, but he was like so kind of crazy as a character that I think he worked. He was really effective. Like, you know, you can look at the Rumble where he puts one of the Nation guys through the table on the outside. You can look at like WrestleMania where there's the Chicago street fight and all that. Like, there's good stuff there, but man, that the heel turn, the injuries, the guy's just colder than ice.
Yeah.
Speaking of cold, what I thought was clever about it is he gets near the end, and apparently Ahmed's got the title won because he's about to do a Pearl River Plunge, and Steve Austin appears out of nowhere, gives Ahmed a stunner for a DQ, and then leaves, because obviously Stone Cold Steve Austin wants to win the Intercontinental title from Owen Hart. He does not want anyone else having it, and that includes Ahmed Johnson. So he came in, got the DQ for Owen, and Owen keeps the title, and Stone Cold's still waiting for Survivor Series. What do you think of the match was shit, but what do you think of the story?
Yeah, the match was shit. I mean, the only good part in the match was when Owen got like the ref between him and Ahmed just lifted the ref up to get him out of the way, and that let Owen Hart hit a low blow, and that spot kind of made me laugh. The rest of it was awful, like ripping the Canadian flag off the flagpole, which, you know, again, like, Americans are so weird about their flags that they'll just rip someone else's flag, and then I don't understand. Like, it makes me uncomfortable to see flags, like, just get kicked around and ripped off of flagpoles and stuff, especially by baby faces. But like, Stone Cold Steve Austin stunning Ahmed Johnson was fantastic because, you know, he doesn't want Owen to win the match, right? Like, he wants Ahmed to win the match, too. He doesn't want Owen to have any more victories than he needs, but he does want Owen to keep the title. So ensuring that it ends via DQ is perfect. I don't know why it didn't end in a DQ earlier, because Owen's using the Canadian flag to choke Ahmed in direct view of the referee, and that's not a disqualification for some reason.
Wrestling.
Like, wrestling, 1997 refereeing. And, like, there was that bit where Ahmed started kind of running in place to sort of lazily fire up. Is that what he was trying to do? Like, it really didn't make any sense. This match was terrible, but
I used to be able to decipher Ahmed Johnson, which I don't know what that makes me, but now I can't. Now I don't know what's happening with him.
Yeah, like, because I really liked Ahmed Johnson at the beginning of our timeline. Like, I thought he was good, and I liked, you know, he was always really intense and mental, and I think his intensity is just gone now, too. Like, he...
I think as well, like, watching it the second time, I was like, oh, I wish, I said this a couple weeks ago, I wish that we'd gotten that Ahmed Undertaker babyface versus babyface match.
I thought that would have been really great, and it was a really big bummer that we didn't get that match.
Yeah, that would have been, because I think that would have been a good story for Taker as well, you know, that the kind of, like, he's reluctantly having to stay with Bearer, Ahmed doesn't respect him for not standing up for himself, and, like, there's a story there. I think that was good, mm-hmm. and, you know, Ahmed joined the Nation, terrible. Just terrible.
Yeah, it didn't make any sense at all.
So then the gods shined to Sondra Ruth Whistledike Rheinstein, because it is the return of the final, enjoy it for its finalness, the last annual Milton Bradley Karate Fighters Holiday Tournament, where we have Bruce Pritchard dressed up as Jim Ross and another man pretending to be Vince, maybe?
Kevin Dunn?
No.
Okay.
No.
I wasn't sure.
I'll send you a picture of Kevin Dunn, actually, so you can see what he looks like. But yeah, it's not Kevin Dunn. And the opening contest...
And George and Adam were there, too, as fans.
George and Adam were there as fans with signs.
Because they had Razorjaw 316. Because Jerry Lawler is going to be using Razorjaw and Brian Christopher has the Sun Warrior. And I like that they did the intro thing, like, in every nation, da-da-da-da, they're the worldwide leader in hand-to-hand combat games. I love every
Mental.
Second of this, Kenny. Like, I am so excited
so
about
the
Karate
Fighters
Tournament.
How did you feel about the first ever father versus son in the Milton Bradley Karate Fighters Tournament as Jerry Lawler faced off against Brian Christopher? Talk me through your thoughts.
I mean, it was definitely an interesting choice, right? Because, and the funniest part about it is that they're totally playing on the father-son thing, right? Because Jerry Lawler says, good luck, kid. And Brian Christopher goes, you too, old man. Ha 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 ha. And does his laugh thing. And you can tell Lawler, I mean, Lawler.
I can't let you know why. I love him. He's great.
I kind of love him too. Like, he's so good. Like, he's so annoying, but he's so good at being annoying. And he's really good at this. But what was weird about this, though, is if you notice when they're battling, right? Brian Christopher's little karate fighter guy, I swear, jumps off the stand before Jerry Lawler's figure kicks it off. Like,
we might need something a recount here.
Fishy.
We might need a...
Something fishy is going on here.
Can we watch
because...
a playback of this or something? We might need to...
I'm just saying, if you look at the slow motion replay, I think something fishy is going on with Brian Christopher's equipment.
His Milton Bradley Karate Fighters equipment.
That too.
that...
But Jerry Lawler wins and says, go home, kid. I think I hear your mother calling. And I just,
dad,
I'm trying to
dad
find a
and
picture
son
in the
banter.
Bracket.
Dad and son
dad
banter.
And son
Next
banter.
Week, though, my excitement level is off the chain. Because it's not, I mean, it is the Battle of the Spanish Commentators. And it's not Carlos Cabrera versus Tito Santana. It's Carlos Cabrera versus El Matador. Tito Santana is bringing back El Matador one more time for the Karate Fighters Tournament. Now I'm in. Now I'm all in. He better have the fucking bull... robe thing that you know, the little kind of bit, the sheet thing that you use, you better have that back. I'm expecting big things from El Matador next week. Big things.
I hope so. I want it to be as bonkers as possible because that's the whole point of the Karate Fighters Holiday Tournament. I absolutely love the Karate Fighters Holiday Tournament. It was my favorite part of Retro Raw last year when we were doing it. It is my favorite part of Retro Raw now. It's the best thing they've ever done, basically, like, in all of WWE. I'm so excited. I'm looking at the bracket now, because I saved a picture of the bracket. And so it's El Matador versus Carlos. I was going to ask who they were, because I didn't know.
So Carlos Cabrera is still...
Well, it's Carlos Cabrera, because he's a commentator.
He's still... I think he's still a WWE Spanish commentator now.
Yeah, he is.
Because it used to be Carlos and Hugo Savinovich, and then Hugo left because he was mad at the Coke. But Tito Santana came in briefly in 97, I think 6 months to a year as a Spanish commentator. So that's Battle of the Spanish Announcers.
Yeah, so that'll be fun. And then we have Doc Hendricks,
mm-hmm.
which is just listed Doc, versus Shrimp Scampi.
I mean, I don't understand why you're looking at me as if I'm going to know who that is, because I never got to see this as a kid, so this is all new to me.
I'm just wondering what that's going to mean. Like, I'm so curious who Shrimp Scampi is going to be, because
like
I don't know.
Sable in a fish suit or something, isn't it?
Oh, for fuck's sake, it probably is. And then my favorite matchup in this whole thing is Sunny versus George and Adam together.
Oh, God.
I'm really
She's
curious
so
how that's going
to play out.
She's so
going to use her tits to win. There's no way they're beating her.
Of course she is. Of course she is. I can't wait.
And then what's the last one?
I cannot wait. No, that is it.
Oh, yeah, because that's three and then the one. Okay.
Yep.
Stay tuned, folks, for the remainder.
I love the Karate Fighters tournament so much.
We get Mankind out to discuss Kane. He talks about, you know, all Dude Love wants to do was make people smile, and look what happened. Paul Bearer ruined their amicable parting of the ways, and now Mankind's going to make his life a living hell. There's this whole thing that, you know, Paul Bearer sees, you know, Mankind as Kane's trying to get to the Undertaker, and Mankind said, well, you know, I'm going to be your roadblock to the Undertaker, or I'll die trying. And then Commissioner Slaughter comes out, and you know, with the goodwill of the wrestlers and with their health in mind, he says, "I can't have you face Kane. You know, he's mentally unstable." You know, as if like what I love was like, "Listen, Mankind, Kane is mentally unstable. You're fine
right?
though. You've never done anything weird, but Kane is mentally unstable."
Well, he does call Mankind unstable. He says that looking
the man
at Mankind...
wrestles as three different people.
Well, yeah. That's why he's talking about, like, looking at your unstable mental condition. He wasn't talking about Kane... I mean, he was talking about Kane not being stable either, because he says that Kane is not a rational human being. Understatement of the world. But yes, apparently because they're both, you know, mentally unstable and crazy, Sergeant Slaughter says that he cannot sanction or approve the match. And then Mankind is so cute. He goes, "What if I said please?"
So Mankind tries. He tries to do it the right way, and Slaughter says, "Like, I'm sorry, I can't." And then Mankind's like, "Well, maybe I'm just gonna have to convince you." And then gives Sergeant Slaughter the mandible claw. What I want people to watch here is the great detail of how well Sergeant Slaughter sells this, because he tries to like get his hands above his head to get out of the move, and mm-hmm. can't. And he sells it so well.
He really does. I loved this whole segment because Mankind calling Paul Bearer Uncle Paul again and, you know, bringing in their history, right? Like saying, "We parted ways without a single cross word." And, you know, he thought that they had some sort of unspoken truce, but what he did to Dude Love last week bothered him a great deal. And now he's left with no choice but to make Paul Bearer's life a living hell. It's really cool. Like, I like him playing on that history. And I really just love the story of Kane is trying to bowl through everyone to get to the Undertaker, and now Mankind is willing to go through whoever's in between him and Kane. So I like that, you know, he said Sergeant Slaughter, you know, he had terrible things planned for Kane or whatever, but now he's going to have to do them to Sergeant Slaughter because he's standing between Mankind and Kane. And I don't know, the logic of it is great. The delivery is so good. Like, I'm blown away by how much more I like Mankind than Dude Love. Like, Dude Love just kind of... Mankind says Dude Love wants to make people smile. Dude Love kind of makes me roll my eyes because he never seems super committed to it and doesn't really seem to know who he is. But Mankind is so fully formed and so good at this that I'm so glad to see him back.
Welcome back, Mankind. Yeah, it was a really good segment, and it did a good job in kind of making Mankind feel like a player for Kane. The idea at this point with Kane was they don't want him wrestling on TV. They want him wrestling on house shows that he can kind of like work his style into the gimmick so that he can have it down before he starts wrestling on TV. So that's why you're not seeing him wrestle just yet. We get the war zone starts with Bret Hart versus Ken Shamrock in one of my favorite Bret Hart matches of our run so far.
Why isn't this the main event?
No idea. There must have been like a big football game on or a big something. They weren't convinced people would stick around. There must have been something like that. But like, you know, Bret, like this, I really liked Bret's two matches with Undertaker at SummerSlam One Night Only. But apart from that, like, Bret's not really had any good solo opponents in, like, ages. You know, Patriot was pretty rubbish. Goldust wasn't very good. Farouk was just okay. But this match with Shamrock
was
just...
It's been, since Austin, right?
Yeah.
He's done anything super interesting.
But this was so good. You've got, belly-to-belly suplexes, Russian leg sweeps, sharpshooter attempts, ankle locks, all these things going on. The ref, Shamrock is in the sharpshooter, he gets countered into an ankle lock, but Brett takes Errol Heppner down with him. While Heppner's down, Brett taps out, because of course that's what happens.
That was such a cool spot. That was like my favorite, because I love Ken Shamrock rolling out of the sharpshooter attempt into an ankle lock, but then knocking down the ref at the same time. I don't know, I thought it was really clever and really well done.
Yeah, definitely. It was really, really good. And then we had, at the same from there, Shamrock releases the hold, he's checking on Heppner, allows Brett to get a chair and hit him from behind, and then Brett turns into the sharpshooter, and then Shawn Michaels runs down, gives Brett sweet chin music, and then Shawn's beating the crap out of Brett, and then Shamrock sees this, and then Shamrock starts beating the piss out of Shawn. Oh, so good. The referees and agents come down to try and put a stop to it, and the Hart Foundation and DX come out as well to try and get their guys, big pull-apart brawl between Shawn and Brett. Really building Survivor Series now. This was, great storytelling. The match, the finish, the ref being down, bringing Michaels in, having the Hart Foundation and DX there. This was just great, I thought.
Yeah, no, this was excellent. I think earlier on in the match, it didn't seem quite as intense as normal Ken Shamrock matches, so I wasn't as into it, right away. But it picked up, for sure. The intensity kind of built, and then... I don't know, Bret Hart and Ken Shamrock work well together, which wasn't a surprise. I really liked it. But I was, again, kind of confused about Bret Hart super healing it up against Ken Shamrock because, Bret's bringing a chair into the ring and Ken Shamrock, gets a victory because Bret taps and the official doesn't see it because he's been knocked down. And so I'm questioning the logic behind making Bret seem like such a super, super heel on this show again when he seemed to have effectively turned babyface before. It was just kind of confusing to me, I guess. But the match itself I really did enjoy. And it never technically even ended, really. I think it is funny because, right at the beginning of the match, before anything happened, I was like, Shawn Michaels is going to interfere, isn't he? Because this is not going to have a finish. It's just going to be Shawn Michaels interfering. And lo and behold, Shawn Michaels interfered. And it's sweet chin music to Bret Hart and everything. And the match never even ends. I don't think they ever ring the bell again, but it just, there are all sorts of officials and agents and everyone in the ring, and there's chaos, and then there's the big brawl at the end. Bulldog was in the corner with Shawn Michaels during the brawl for quite a while. It was like he forgot what side he was supposed to be on or something, which was weird. But I really like China shoving Pat Patterson down and throwing him about. I thought that was really good. So, I mean, I liked the chaos at the end, for sure. And the match was good too. I would like to see more of Ken Shamrock versus Bret Hart. I think that would have been a far more interesting program than, the Patriot.
Yeah, it's I thought they did a really good job with this though. I just really enjoyed it. I'm glad that we got to see Bret versus Shamrock before Bret goes.
Yeah.
We come back and Bret's backstage, pissed, and he's sort of vowing that Survivor Series would be the end of Shawn Michaels, which is just really bizarre to watch when you know where it goes.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, I can't imagine there's anyone listening to this podcast who does not know where it goes. So,
I would be pretty surprised. I mean,
you're even
one
baffled
of those
thinking
things.
About it. Look, you couldn't even finish the thought there.
I can't. Yeah, well, I can't, because it's one of the first things that I was taught when I first started watching wrestling. I remember learning about the Montreal Screwjob and, talking to my friend Sean in Metropolis, and he was telling me all about it, and I was like, wow, this is fascinating.
You kind of have to know about it, because it's such a big part of the mythology of wrestling now, and the kind of history of it, and it gets brought up so much, and so many things happen because of it, that I guess, it's one of those big moments.
Yeah.
We get the new Blackjacks taking on the Road Dogg and Billy Gunn.
The baddest ass in professional wrestling, the badass Billy Gunn.
How does one quantify the baddest ass in professional wrestling?
I don't know. I was wondering the same thing. Does he? I mean, if anyone
God,
was
I'm
going
to
have
Sandra
an ass measuring system, it should
Jesus
be Billy Gunn.
Christ. I'm thinking the same things as Sandra.
Ha ha! I'm so proud.
Says the woman who is tweeting her excitement of WrestleMania in October.
I know. Shut up.
Yes.
But
yes.
I... Okay, so part of that is because I'm going, so I'm excited to hang out with, like, you know, the crew and seeing everyone again and whatnot. I still don't want to talk about the booking of WrestleMania in October. Don't think you've pushed me that far over the edge.
Baby steps. Anyway, so it's a very, very short match.
The
Outlaws just get the crap beaten out of them, and then Billy Gunn hits Bradshaw with a chair from the floor. Road Dogg crawls over and gets the pin. And JR says that chair shot would have knocked out a Brahma bull.
I was like, maybe ask Rocky in a couple years.
And then, yeah, so that's kind of the... And then we get... it's here where the Godwins come out, isn't it?
Yeah, fucking hell, why the Godwins?
The Godwins and the Headbangers come out, so that kind of sets up the eight-man tag at Survivor Series. So it's fine. You know, I'd rather have the Godwins come out to
their
run-in.
This is on Survivor Series, though. This eight-man tag, the Godwins and Road Dogg and Billy Gunn versus the Headbangers and the New Blackjacks, who are apparently faces now? Because reasons? Why?
They were always baby faces.
No, they weren't.
Yes, they were.
I couldn't tell. I thought they were heels.
Wait a minute, let's check.
I swear they were heels, because JR was cut, or not JR, JBL was cutting like heel promos.
But yeah, no, they were promos. They were heels originally. You were right. Fair play. But
I know that WWF has a problem presenting baby faces, but that would have been.
I mean, I would rather see the Godwins and the Headbangers running here at the end of a 2 minute match than watch the Headbangers and the Godwins for 10 minutes.
True. Very true. It was during this part that that Vince McMahon sends well wishes to Maureen Morella, wife of Bob Morella, a.k.a. Gorilla Monsoon, because apparently Gorilla's in the hospital and is very, very ill. Does he die super soon?
No, he doesn't die till 99, but it's pretty grave at this point because he's got diabetes and he needs to have... He had a heart attack... And he's got diabetes. He needs to go and undergo a heart transplant, but he has to wait until, it was recommended that he was going to have a heart transplant, but he has to have some sort of heart surgery, major heart surgery, but he can't have it until his diabetes stabilizes.
Okay.
So, for a bit, I was thought it was pretty grave, but, you know, he's going to make it through, which is good.
It's just like calling him by his, you know, real name was interesting.
Mm-hmm. There was a side of the crowd they closed up on with a guy with a Hulk Hogan mask saying, "We'll wrestle for food."
Oh yeah, I forgot to mention the guy earlier too during one of the matches that had "I Heart Fat Chicks" painted on his chest, and he was very proud of this.
Wasn't he like the skinniest guy imaginable?
Yes,
as well?
He was like the skinny ginger guy.
See, in 2017, I don't know what I'm allowed to say anymore, so I'm not going to say anything. I was going to say, you always find, though, that like, there's always that thing, like it's in America anyway, where you see like Jerry Springer and it'd be like a really, 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 really fat woman with a really, 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 really skinny guy. It's like this weird thing. Maybe it's just like maybe if you're one, you're into the other, I don't know. Anyway.
I don't know.
Kane and Paul Bearer come out. Jim Ross is there, very brave of him to sort of, you know, be in the ring.
Ross is very brave tonight because he interviewed Mankind again too, and I didn't know if he would want to interview Mankind again after getting the mandible claw, so good on Jim Ross.
So we have Slaughter's changed his mind, he's given Mankind's request to wrestle Kane at Survivor Series, and you know, then basically we've got Paul Bearer talking about Hellfire, Living in Hell, Judgment Day, fight your little brother, dead man. Paul Bearer is determined to get the Undertaker to fight Kane, but Undertaker does not want to do so. He is not wanting to fight his little brother, and I think that's adorable. Good for you, Undertaker.
I think it is adorable. It's a really good story. It's a really, really good story. And, you know, Paul Bearer saying, "You don't know what living in hell is, but your little brother knows. He burned in hell thanks to you." And I really just kind of want Kane to murder the shit out of the Undertaker. And I don't think I'm supposed to feel that way, but Kane is so cool and also not the Undertaker. So I'm kind of on Kane's side.
We're going to get Undertaker sort of like saying no, we're going to get Mankind Kane at Survivor Series. It's funny how Mankind and Kane at Survivor Series kind of reminds me of Kane and Braun Strowman at Survivor Series, but in a different way. It's like one of those just like two monsters having a match. We go to the DX locker room. Rick Rude introduces Shawn Michaels. So, you know, Shawn wants to talk to Brett man to man. Which means he stands up, pulls his pants down, and you see his arse while China holds up DX signs. We see more of Sean's arse than we've seen so far. Sadly, we see more of it in the future. Sean thinks it's very funny. JR wonders what's become of us, and I shook my head.
Vince throws his hands up in disgust, and for once I'm kind of with Vince. And like, for most of the segment, the signs are in front of Sean's ass, and then, you know, Triple H moves one of the signs at one point, so we do see his whole ass. This is, I don't know, it's just dumb. But Rick Rude is so bad. Like, he's so terrible. He says the words.
Don't you be ragging on Rude here. Rude's just trying to make a living.
He says the words about he's introducing Sean as the icon, blah, 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 blah. I forget what all he said. But he says that he wanted to speak to you. If he wanted to speak to you, he'd reach in his back pocket and squeeze the words on your scrawny chest. What?
Right.
Like,
to be fair, though, Rick Rude is trying to sell insurance, and what did Mr. Saunders say when he saw Rick Rude last week?
That he looks like an insurance salesman.
That's called effective.
I suppose so. But just what does that even mean? He'd reach in his back pocket and squeeze the words on your scrawny chest. Like, I'm not even sure if that's sexual. It's just confusing.
Yeah. Same here. I'm not really too sure. I do think with Sean and Hunter here kind of seem like those guys in high school who'd be like, we should all have a wank together and then, like, wank on a biscuit and the last one has to eat it. And you're like, I'm all right, actually. I'm good. Yeah,
I'm
good.
I'm going to go over here, away from you.
I don't need to play Soggy Biscuit, but thanks for the offer. Have you heard of Soggy Biscuit before?
Yes, because you explained Soggy Biscuit on a podcast.
That says it's something I would have done.
It was.
Yeah. Was it behind a paywall, at least?
Mm.
Ugh. Get that shit away for free.
I can't remember. It may have been on a Patreon thing with David. It was with David, of course. But
oh, listen to you, Lord Muck over there. Oh, absolutely, David. I would be caught dead. Fucking.
I'm just saying, you egg each other on.
Mrs. Heavy Machinery over there. Anyway. So up next we get Mark Merrow versus Flash Funk. I quite enjoyed this, actually.
Has a sign that says "Sable, wait till I grow up," and wait for what exactly?
I mean, I think you know. I don't think
she's waited up till this point.
Well, now you need to fight Brock for her, and I'd be fucked if I'm doing that. Imagine.
Right?
I quite like these two, actually. Like, there was, you know, some cool moonsaults, and Merrow's kind of, you know, got a bit of a attitude now. Does the TKO in the end, obviously. And he's showing that kind of slow, sort of, you know, he's just really frustrated that people are so into Sable and don't really care about him, and it's starting to get to him. So it is starting to get to him.
I mean, Mark Merrow is a heel now, basically.
Yeah.
Like, he is, because he hits a low blow before the TKO for the win. So, and I mean, they have him facing Flash Funk, who's a babyface. I mean, he's a boring one, but he's a babyface, right? And yeah, the two of them working together was cool. And on commentary, you know, I think Vince was saying that, you know, this should be an outstanding matchup because they have similar abilities, you know, they fly around and all that kind of stuff. And they mentioned that Mark Merrow is going to be on Team USA at Survivor Series, which is the first time they mentioned that there was going to be a Team USA at Survivor Series, which leads me to believe that there will also be a Team Not USA at Survivor Series. So what I know of the card so far...
I told you this.
You told me this.
Canada.
Okay, well, yeah. But I'm just saying, like, as presented to me on Retro Raw, what I know of the card so far is Shawn Michaels versus Bret Hart, which should be good. Mankind versus Kane, which should be really, you know, cool and interesting and great and monsters and grr. And Team USA versus Team Not USA doesn't really fill me with anticipation. The 8-man tag fills me with, can I just not watch that? Survivor Series is seeming like kind of a mixed bag so far, so I guess we'll see what happens. But I think in this match, Mark Merrow and Sable didn't really, like, their dynamic didn't really come across so much. Like, Sable's still dancing around on the outside with her whip, and I just imagine that she has an entire closet full of cat suits, because she has so many of them, and they're all different. But
she
they're
does
all
look
just,
good
like,
in a cat suit.
Black
I
and shiny.
She does look really good in that.
Yeah, I mean, she's, you know, not really my type, but that's fine. She looks good in the cat suit. But, you know, she's dancing around with her whip and having fun, but you didn't get a lot of the Mark Merrow dissension. Like, he seemed annoyed about life and about her dancing around, but we didn't see him, like, stop her or try and haul her away or anything this time because it cut away. And I like the slow build of it because it's not just, like, him being, you know, super, super terrible to her every week. It's, I don't know, it's building. There's something simmering, and I think that's good.
So then we have... part one of JR's sit down with Jeff Jarrett. We get shown about, you know, in July 95, Jeff Jarrett didn't want to be Double J anymore, told Vince McMahon he wasn't going to control his life, he left, he went to WCW, then he realised that unlike the WWF, he had no opportunity, he had a spot there, but since he wasn't one of Eric's boys, he didn't have any stroke, therefore he had no ladder of opportunity. He feels like true in-ring ability does not count in WCW. The biggest difference between the WCW and the WWF is that the WWF has action and excitement, bell to bell, from start to finish. I imagined immediately Sonya was going, are we watching the same show, Jeff Jarrett?
Yeah, I was real curious what show he's been watching. Because, what?
In WCW, six...
I just watched the new Black Jackson, you know, Road Dogg and Billy Gunn.
I mean, Nitro... Anyway. In WCW, he says that 6 to 8 of their top stars are all in their 40s and wrestling is a young man's game. And that's part one. And what do you make so far of Jeff Jarrett, just on the presentation they've given you? What is your... Try and explain Jeff Jarrett to me as if I've not seen...
He wears too much eyeliner.
But imagine I know who Jeff Jarrett is, and imagine I know that he was in WWF before, and I know he was in WCW, and you've told me, oh, he's back in the WWF. And I was like, oh, okay, so what's his deal? Like, how would you explain him so far?
He likes to complain about how he sucks everywhere he goes. Like... But he thinks that he doesn't suck. He thinks that he just doesn't get opportunities everywhere. Like, I'm kind of curious why he came back to the WWF if they were so horrible to him. Because he's talking about not getting opportunities. He's just like a guy who wants to bitch about his booking, kind of. This is really not hitting any marks for me, like, in terms of being interesting at all. Like,
what
would
make it more interesting?
Not being Jeff Jarrett? I don't know. Like, I guess I'm just not that into anything he's saying, because I don't believe that Jeff Jarrett is this amazing talent. I think if someone cutting these promos, like, say if this were, I don't know, like, someone who can actually talk and be charismatic, like, if, say, like, if Steve Austin had been in WWF and then went to WCW and then came back to WWF and was having this kind of gimmick and could do something good with it, then that might be interesting. But Jeff Jarrett just seems so bland and boring, and his eye makeup was ridiculous on this show. Like, ridiculous. What even are you doing, Jeff Jarrett? So, I don't know. Like, there's something about him that I just don't like. And, you know, he's talking about how he, you know, came out of WWF, like, he packed his bag and said, Vince McMahon, you no longer run my life. And it was just weird. I don't know. Like, it seems like they're using him to kind of bury WCW. And he sounds like part corporate shill for WWF, saying that WCW was even worse than shitty WWF back in the day or something. I don't know. It just doesn't work for me.
Yes, it'll be. I think there will be a point where you will fall in love with Jeff Jarrett because of the kind of.
Does he get his light up hat back?
I cannot confirm nor deny.
Because if he gets his light up hat back, that would help a lot. Like, I feel like if Jeff Jarrett were cutting these promos wearing a light up hat and sunglasses, then I might have a very different opinion of Jeff Jarrett.
I love how easily swayed you are by clothing.
Well, I mean, he's trying to tell me that he's an exciting, interesting performer, and he's not. But
so
if
light
you...
up glasses equal interesting,
more interesting.
I mean, to be fair, you do now like Crush because he has a motorcycle. So
yeah, at least I'm consistent.
You make no sense as a human.
It was good to hear With My Baby Tonight in the background. That made me smile.
It was main event time.
The production of this interview. Can I just point out, mm-hmm. like, the production was weird. I don't know what went wrong.
It was like they were both sitting in front of a projector.
Yeah, like, they were not in the same room. It was like, okay, so you know on Podcast One, when they're mid-interview or whatever, and then Chris Jericho will say, oh, and I'm really interested in hearing that story, Edge, about how you know, were on this car trip with Rhino, but first, let me tell you about True Car.
Because as soon as he starts, his voice sounds different.
The audio is different because he records it in studio.
But the best one is when he'll go, he'll go, Sandra, that's so good. But I tell you what's also really good is whenever I go to Little Caesars.
Yes.
You can't do that. Oh, so
exactly.
Annoying.
Exactly. That's what it reminded me of, because it was like Jeff Jarrett would say something and then JR did not sound like he was in the same room with him and asked a question. It was like JR's questions weren't good enough the first time they conducted the interview, so they had to edit some stuff in. But then later, like halfway through the interview, it switches and you do see them going back and forth and having a conversation, which I think is the more effective part of the interview.
It's main event time. It's a non-title match. As the
if you want to call this a main event.
I mean, it's better than last week's main event.
True.
The Legion of Doom are facing in a non-title match Savio Vega and Miguel Perez. Wearing torn up blackjack hats, the New Age Outlaws are at ringside. Legion of Doom couldn't do it even though they exist.
Oh, is that what they were doing? Mm-hmm. They were wearing torn up blackjack hats?
Yep. Road Dogg blindly trips up Miguel from the floor, which was actually really clever because that is a callback to what he did in Jeff Jarrett's last match in 1995 when he was the roadie, because he was meant to trip Sean's foot, but he tripped Jeff's by mistake.
Oh.
So I like the callback to that. That was quite cool. And then Hawk gets the win in like 2.5 minutes. And then LOD and the Briquas chase off the New Age Outlaws. And then we cut to Ahmed Johnson, who tells us that Steve Austin has entered his zone. Look out next Monday night, Steve, because Ahmed Johnson is challenging Stone Cold Steve Austin.
I'm just going to call gimmick infringement right here.
This was Kenny's dream was coming true. Ahmed Johnson versus Stone Cold Steve Austin.
Excellent.
Could not be more excited. Could not be more excited. What do you think of the main event?
Well, it's Los Barriquas versus LOD, so it wasn't great. I thought this was for the title.
No, it was non-title.
Oh, I thought it was for the title, but whatever. It doesn't really matter. It was bad, and I didn't care. Miguel took this weird bump. Like, Hawk basically raised his hand in his general direction at one point, and Miguel took like this huge back bump for it, and it made me laugh. Road Dogg and Billy Gunn, I didn't understand why they were ringside. I didn't understand why they were trying on LOD's shoulder pads and all of that stuff. Like, it just didn't really make any sense. But, you know, whatever. Road Dogg and Billy Gunn are, you know, clearly meant to be with DX with all these shenanigans and everything. It makes perfect sense that they end up being with DX later on. And LOD wins, so that's, you know, that's good. That's fine. The Ahmed Johnson thing, though, like, this was another weird tacked-on promo at the end because, you know, he says something about, you know, Austin, he's so, so angry and everything. But saying that, you know, Austin 316, what you did by putting your hands on me was enter the zone, my zone. And I just imagine Ken Shamrock is backstage going, hey, buddy, zones are my thing. I have a zone. I get into the zone. You don't have a zone. Like, you don't get to have a zone. I don't think there's too much zone talk on Retro Raw right now. And I don't think Ken Shamrock would approve of Ahmed Johnson's gimmick infringement. But I am so excited to see Ahmed versus Steve Austin.
But they're in the war zone. Wouldn't that be the best way to talk about the zone?
Well, I guess, but like, I don't know. I just feel like if someone's like, hey, I have a zone, and he's been trying to get over the zone thing forever, then that's just sort of his deal, and Ahmed Johnson shouldn't steal it. But he does say it's his turn to score on Austin, so Monday night, because I'm coming to get you! And he like yells it really weird. I don't know. Ahmed's so mental.
Ahmed Johnson versus Stone Cold Steve Austin. Arguably my most excited match of 1997. So I guess for this episode, where's your thumb for the October 27th episode of Raw is War?
Thumbs in the middle, I guess. There was some stuff I really liked, but just it's kind of a mixed bag. Like the Karate Fighters tournament is back, which is excellent. And the opening segment was interesting because of all the, you know, racial overtones and everything, but I just don't know what it's trying to achieve. And, you know, I really liked Ken Shamrock versus Bret Hart, but it also had Goldust versus Hunter Hearst Helmsley, so fuck that. Like, I don't know. It was just kind of uneven as a show, so middling to maybe down, but I'll go in the middle because it has the Karate Fighters on it.
I love that. That's the sway of a decision. I thought it was a thumbs in the middle show. I thought there was some really good stuff on it. There's some kind of dross on it. Really enjoyed the Shamrock Bret Hart match. Really liked the opening segment. Really liked the story of Owen and Ahmed, even though the match was terrible. A thumbs in the middle show for me. Just some kind of news going on this week. We had Steve Austin actually returned to the ring this past weekend and did short matches with Triple H. So, you know, he's just trying to kind of modify his style so he can come back. The Patriot suffered a torn tricep at this show. when he was having his match with Jim Neidhart and Shotgun. So the beginning of the end of the Patriot in the WWF.
Oh boy.
Owen Hart suffered a severe concussion in his match here with Ahmed and won't be back in the ring until the Friday weekend of Survivor Series for a house show in Toronto. He suffered the concussion when Ahmed delivered his scissors kick, but delivered it to his head.
Yeah, that did not look good.
Anyway, there's a lot of heat apparently in Ahmed Johnson for it, and because the previous night in Oklahoma City, he got into a legit fight backstage with D'Lo Brown, and Farouk had to come in and break it up, and it re-aggravated his bad knee in the process, which is why here, his knee was so bad.
Wow. That's just the most Ahmed Johnson thing in the world, isn't it?
There was also... what else was there? I was going to say... So, I've been talking for a couple of weeks now about Yokozuna coming back. Yokozuna will now not be returning at all. He was supposed to come back this past weekend, but he underwent tests to get a license in New York, because at this point you still needed to have a wrestling license in New York to compete. Mm-hmm. And he failed the physical due to obesity and an irregular heartbeat. He weighed in excess of 600 pounds. Because commissions at this point honoured other commission suspensions, his license was pulled in New York, it was pulled from another 22 states as well.
So I was going to say, you still need a license to wrestle in Oklahoma.
Yep, so there was like 22 states that basically, if you couldn't get it in one, the rest would follow. And because of the Pillman situation, they don't want to put anybody in the ring with risk of, you know, heart problems, whatever. The Honky Tonk Man has officially been removed as a performer of the World Wrestling Federation, but he is still going to be working with the WWF, doing public appearances, you know, kicking off ticket sales and stuff. And, you know, if they find something for him to do, he might come back. But Tony Anthony, who played Uncle Cletus, is completely gone. What else was there?
I mean, you're saying the Honky Tonk Man and Uncle Cletus aren't going to be on my TV, so I'm not exactly bummed by this news.
No, I didn't. You would be. They did two shows in Lexington, Evansville. Remember Evansville?
They headlined. I have friends that live in Evansville.
Well, no, I was saying that more for the Jerry Lawler Goldust match from the.
Yeah.
But interestingly enough, the two shows were headlined by Bret Hart versus Jerry Lawler, with Lawler winning via DQ. They also did Undertaker getting a.
Wait, they had Jerry Lawler beating Bret Hart, the champion.
By DQ.
Oh, by DQ.
You know, it makes sense. Lawler's the local heel guy, put in the match with the heel champion. Undertaker got a title shot in Nassau Coliseum, but they did the DQ there too. Shawn teamed with Triple H in Nassau, and they faced off against LOD. And also, the Bulldog is injured again, so he will still be around, but he's kind of taking it easy. And it was said that Cornette's commentary he did, that was, you know, about icons and Hogan and all that, it was difficult for him because Piper was his hero as a teenager, but he was sad that he wouldn't retire when he probably should. Vince had some say in this promo. He was also careful when he knocked WCW because he didn't want to knock stuff that WWF do as well. So yeah, that's pretty much all the gossip from this week. I do just want to say two pieces of news. I have decided to do something for the listeners of Inside the Ropes because I know that you want me to fuck with Sondra a little bit, right? That's what we're here for. Let's not lie to ourselves. So
apparently,
I can confirm, ladies and gentlemen, that for the first time in years, in New Orleans, Louisiana, there's going to be a photo opportunity that only Sondra is going to be sent to. Sondra will be getting a full picture with all four Los Boricuas.
Wait, what, really?
Yep.
Amazing.
And they look...
I get to have my picture taken with Savio Vega.
They look so terrible. I can't wait. if somebody wants to, like, fashion a Los Boricuas t-shirt, or maybe Innes can make the pedo I love Los Boricuas t-shirt that he's used to making.
I'll wear it.
I'm sure Sondra would wear it for this photo opportunity because, you know, she's a team player. And just finally, obviously we're getting towards the end of the year. And a lot of people want us to do, like, maybe, like, some sort of end-of-year thing. Michael Farrer and some other people have asked us to do a sort of separate, maybe, one-hour awards thing for Retro Raw. I'm leaving that in Sondra's hands. I will do it if she wants to do it, but if she doesn't want to do it, we don't do it.
I don't know if I remember enough of Retro Raw to give awards.
I think you don't give yourself enough credit. I'm sure you remember it. You try not to.
I try not to. Some of it leaves my head immediately.
Where can people find you on Twitter, though, Sandra?
Find me on Twitter at SandraRuthRW. Find Kenny on Twitter at KennyMC1985. And follow Inside the Ropes at Inside_the Ropes.
You can also head over to patreon.com/InsideTheRopes, where you can find a exclusive interview with Shawn Michaels. You can also find the PowerSlam podcast early. David and I are attempting to do a podcast later on, but I'm going to be drunk, because that's what's been asked. Mark Rennie has asked for me and David to do a banter podcast with me drunk. So I'm going out to get drunk tonight so that when I come home, I can be drunk for the podcast, which, you know, given right now, I really need to listen to that before I put it out.
Send that to me before you publish it.
Women need to have
partially
a
say. Because it would be good to have me listen to it to make sure you don't say anything egregious, but also because I'm really curious. So if you do say something egregious, I kind of want to hear it.
And then on Sunday, I'm finally recording the Shawn Michaels Chris Jericho podcast on Patreon with Robert, and Robert and I are also going to do a little bit of a catch-up podcast as well. Tons of stuff coming. And then on Monday or Tuesday, I think it is next week, I believe you and David are getting together for a Fave 5 thing on
yes.
Patreon. There's tons of Patreon stuff coming, so do get involved. So thank you very much for listening, everybody, for all your support, and also go to insidetheropes.co.uk if you're in the UK and you want to come see Shawn Michaels, Scott Hall, or Kevin Nash. We would welcome you at any of those events. Sandra, what song would you like us to play at this week?
I don't know. What happened on this show again? I feel like maybe we should play Ken Shamrock's music, because it's a great tune, and he had a good match with Bret Hart, and I just like him.
Good enough for me. Ladies and gentlemen, here is the soothing sounds of Ken Shamrock. We'll be back next week with more, because also next week, we are not that far away from the Survivor Series. So, is it next week? No,
it's November the 9th, so it's like a week and a half or something?
Yes, we're closing in on the Survivor Series. So we've got a lot of stuff coming up on Patreon for that as well. Thanks very much for listening, everybody. Here's Ken Shamrock. Bye.
Bye.